new VanCast for you. After a couple of Canucks games in Winnipeg, Tom, a win on Monday, a loss on Tuesday, they mean absolutely nothing. I mean, the Canucks were officially mathematically eliminated from playoff contention, even though they won on Monday. There are a few storylines that have trickled out of those games, but man, the coaching carousel in the National Hockey League is now spinning at a dizzying speed, and that sort of brings us right back to where we are with the Vancouver Canucks and the future of Travis Green. And I thought there were some really interesting comments from Travis in his pregame availability on Tuesday from Winnipeg. I thought there were some really interesting lineup decisions by Travis Green in the rematch, the back end of the back-to-backs in 3 and 4. So again, the games on the ice, and Tuesday's was just, it was dreadful. I don't think there's another way to describe the actual on-ice product, and maybe it sets the table for the final five that are still to come here. But let's jump right into the coach when he was asked about his future on Tuesday. You know, he reiterated that he wants to be here. He said that Jim Benning has said as much, and the GM has. I don't know about you. Like, I took that absolutely as Travis Green just laying that at the feet of ownership.
For sure. I mean, hard to take it any other way. I thought it sounded like he was frustrated. It sounded like he wanted to stay, like he wants to stay in Vancouver. I think there's no question about that, but it was sort of one of the first times that that was made really plain in his public comments about his status. And, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about what's going on. I don't know what's going on with the Canucks. And here's what I'm increasingly beginning to wonder is I'm wondering if they know. I don't know that there is a plan yet. Like, I don't know that Canucks ownership knows exactly how this is going to go down themselves over the next week, 2 weeks. But, you know, there was indications all along the season that, like, re-signing Green was a priority and, you know, it's a money issue and on and on. And, you know, increasingly, I don't know how much I buy that. Like, increasingly, I sort of wonder, can you bring both the coach and the GM back after this season? Like, that's the big question. And for me, the answer is probably no, right? Someone has to wear this if you're going to present some type of a refreshed outlook in this market and to this fan base. And I just don't know if what seemed to be true and if what was matched by public comments from hockey operations leadership over the past 5-6 months, oh yeah, we want to bring Travis back, it's just, you know, difficult to gauge during the pandemic. Like, I don't know if that's still true. I suspect that things have changed a little bit there too, to be frank. And I mean, why wouldn't they have? Like, if you're a GM who's just presided over this season, you know, don't you kind of have to be able to tell an internal story about how the roster wasn't that bad and, you know, a different guy could get it turned around? Like, isn't that part of the gig? I suspect it is. So, curious to see how this plays out, but I really have very little sense of where this goes from here. There have been points in this season where I was really confident that Jim Benning was safe. I'm not at that point right now. I think this is a really tough one to figure out what's going to happen, and increasingly I'm convinced that it's tough to figure out what's going to come next for the Canucks, in part because I don't know that the key decision makers themselves have a sense of that.
The other interesting answer I thought Travis Green gave, Jay Janauer from Global, asked a pretty wide open question about just how difficult this year has been. And he asked it the day after the Canucks have been mathematically eliminated. And Travis Green has been completely loyal to the cause all season long, right? Like, there were times when it was pretty bad and the heat was on and he could have lashed out. And there have been some moments where you could just tell, and we've been around him enough, you know, to read body language and tone and those types of things. Like, he's been pissed off at times. But I just thought the timing was interesting that Jay asked him, you know, how challenging has this year been? And he ran for 2 minutes with that answer, which isn't like Travis Green, right? Like,
no,
we get his rhythm and we know who he responds to and who he doesn't. And sometimes you can read into, you know, what he doesn't say as opposed to what he did. He took that answer and went for 2 full minutes, which I thought was a little bit curious in and of itself. But within that, you know, he mentioned a couple of times that he's a better coach now for having gone through a year like this. And again, against the backdrop of having been eliminated the night before and just all of this uncertainty that is swirling around his future, you know, I read that as, you know, if anybody's listening to this from another organization and you look at the Canucks and you think this season has been an unmitigated disaster, and it has been, just know I'm a better coach for it. And like, it wasn't chest thumping. Like, it wasn't like, you know, I've done my job and nobody else has done theirs. But I just, it felt like he was signaling to the outside National Hockey League that through all of this, and there has been a lot of this this season, that he feels strongly that he's a better coach now and that he's improved. And it sounded like a guy that was signaling, like, I'm ready for my next opportunity if it's not going to come here in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're dead on in that read. I thought that was a good answer and an interesting perspective into it. You know, it's such a weird environment, right? Like, yeah. The New York Rangers fired David Quinn today. John Tortorella's out in Columbus. There are now, what, four vacancies? Seattle, Columbus, New York, Arizona, right? Is that it?
And maybe Buffalo seems to be interviewing. Yeah, Buffalo.
Sure. And then I would expect more, right? Like, I mean, you'll see after the playoffs. Right. Plus the Canucks. I mean, the Canucks, I expect the Canucks to have a vacant. Like, at this point, I think we expect Travis Green to depart, right? Like, at this point, and, you know, it should be noted that that's probably, in my view, a mistake. Like, I don't know that there's a lot of the, even among the high-profile coaches, like Gerard Gallant, Claude Julien, you know, that sort of class of $5 million coach. Like, I don't know that there's a ton of those guys that I'd take over Green, to be totally honest with you. And I suspect that this is one where fans will roll their eyes and be like, oh, da, da, da. And then 5 years from now, it's going to be just like inarguable. So whatever, we can disagree. Here's why I think the Canucks have screwed this up. I think Green's a really effective communicator and spokesperson for them locally. I think he's still got the trust of this market and this fan base. Like, he's still got confidence from this market and fan base. That's tough to do with everything that's gone on around the team over the past year, but even dating back to the start of his tenure. Been a lot of losing, a lot of dark days. The fact that he still has the confidence of this market, by and large, I think speaks volumes. I have this like standard for coaches. It's like, do you put the right guy on the ice at the right time? Like, that's like the main thing that I want to see from an NHL head coach. And when you go look at Green's usage, like, he's got as much out of this roster as I think anyone could reasonably expect. And then the last part of it is this guy works hard, like genuinely hardworking. And that's not as common as you'd think. Like, he just grinds constantly. And open-minded, right? Like, open-minded, interested in different ideas, different approaches, numbers savvy. I think that all matters too. And then I think he showed in the bubble too, just like a really good feel for in-game adjustments and how to maximize a team's chances in real time of coming back, of holding a lead, of, you know, changing a game plan mid-series to give a particular opponent issues and on and on. You know, I think he does those things really well. I think it's hard to find coaches that check as many boxes. I think the Canucks are going to regret this one. And yet it feels inevitable at this point that he will depart. Now what I don't buy is I don't buy that if Green leaves that the Canucks are going to go cheap in terms of a coach. I think they'll probably pursue a name. That just is what I'd expect. And, you know, I'm really curious to see how this all plays out. But I do think the main thing to watch for is Jim Benning safe? That's the big story of the next 2 weeks for me, JPAT. And I don't have a really good sense of it. Like, I'd say probably, but for me, it's like a 60-40. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not convinced that it's a fait accompli. And that, to me, sort of needs to get settled out first. And should sort of be where our eyes are at. And additionally, I'd add this too, is how does the organization confirm that? You know, like, usually you'd send out a smoke signal or something to be like, hey, no changes here. This organization, though, has not done the best at communicating throughout the past year. I'm really curious to see how they figure that out, how they sort of, like, is it going to be an Aquilini Twitter thread, right? One way or another?
Past year. Lack of communication. Come on.
Yeah.
You're giving them credit. It's been a whole bunch of years.
Right.
There's a couple of things that I want to get to, but when we were just talking about Travis Green Zooms, my favorite moment, and this one flew under the radar, but I have to mention it. Earlier in the week, and I can't even remember what your question was, but you asked Travis a question. He sort of pushed back a touch, just wanting to fully grasp where you were coming from with the question. And so, you know, they control the Zoom and the moderators control and whose mic is open. And so when Travis came back to you and they opened your mic, and the first thing we heard was, "Wallace, this way, come on."
Yeah, not ideal. I was out at the dog park. Yeah, I mean, so it goes. You know, it's a weird thing. Like, my Wallace made a couple appearances on Canuck Zooms, and you know, that's not ideal. But also, it's like it's a work from home world right now. You know what I mean? Everyone has to be patient with my sweet puppy. It is what it is. He also just doesn't appreciate Travis Green being a jerk on those Zooms sometimes. Like, he just wanted to interfere and let Travis know that he didn't appreciate it.
That's all right.
It's like Travis, you're 10 days out from playing both Rathbone and Lind. Why are you giving him lip? Come on. That was what Wallace. That's why Wallace was interfering.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So how does this play out, Tom, in your mind, if Travis Green isn't going to be back as the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks? We saw both John Tortorella and Rick Tocchet get out of their deals the day after their seasons were done. Do you anticipate the same? Like, do you see a way that there is a negotiating period once the Canucks schedule is mercifully finished? Or if you're Travis Green, are you saying, look, there are openings elsewhere. I want to pounce now. Let me out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't have a good sense of what to expect here, JPAD. I'm not exactly sure. But yeah, I would think clarity on Travis Green's status should come pretty quick. In terms of most likely freeing him up to explore some of those opportunities. But also, who knows? Like, you know, that's the right thing to do, but when has this organization done the right thing?
Yeah.
You know, enough. Like, no. I honestly just don't know. Like, so yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, honestly, if Travis was, you know, like never made available postseason and there was an announcement that the two sides were parting ways and that was that. And I also wouldn't be shocked if they, you know, had him do a closing media availability as if everything is normal and then sort of leave him withering on the vine until his contract expires at the end of June. Like, that wouldn't shock me either, right? So yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm trying to get a handle on what to expect, but I just honestly don't. I think a lot of people in this industry are watching the Canucks and trying to get some sense for what they're going to do, and I just don't think they know. Like, I don't think it's that we haven't figured it out. I don't think they know yet, and that's sort of crazy to think, considering the season only has what, 7 days, another week. Yeah. Mercifully, there's only another week left in the season. And yet at the same time, I can't believe there's another week in this season.
Five more games, three of which the NHL is doing its best to hide, by the way, by putting them in the middle of the day, two weekday games back-to-back to close, back-to-back, afternoon, different cities.
What a goofy fucking thing this is.
And that's why I said, like, the game in Winnipeg on Tuesday, like, the Jets still had something to play for. The Canucks clearly didn't, and it looked as such. You know, now you're getting two teams that have nothing to play for, and they've still got to go head-to-head four more times. Like, I don't know, there's a sort of morbid curiosity. Like, what will these games look like? Who's going to be in the lineup? It's worse than
preseason hockey.
Sure it is. Absolutely. Like, why would...
preseason hockey has roster battles. This is like, why? Just why? Why are we doing this? Right. It's so nuts.
So that's why I say, like, I'm curious to see who's in the lineup. And, you know, you mentioned a moment ago that one of the things Travis has done well is, you know, squeeze the most out of this group. I do think that there have been a couple of curious decisions here in the last couple of nights. Mm-hmm. One was Matthew Highmore played 20 minutes on Monday in Winnipeg. 20 minutes, career high by 4 minutes.
Matthew Highmore has good speed, right? But like, how many rush chances have you seen where it's like Pearson, Horvat, and Highmore streaking down, and it's just like, you know, the puck's not getting either on net or passed crisply to one of the other two forwards. It's just like, oh man, we really have to pretend that this is a thing, huh?
Right, and you wrote about it, and you know they're trying to say, like, look, this is what we got for Gaudette. It's going to work. Trust us. Like, we're going to play him 20 minutes. His season high in Chicago, I looked at this, 13 minutes. His average was 9 a night, and he got to 20-plus on Monday. Now, there were 3 minutes of penalty-killing duty. They're testing him there. That's fine. But then the weird part is, on Tuesday, the very next night, he's the low man on the team in even-strength ice time and played just a shade over 11 minutes. And was ahead of only Mark Michaelis. So you go from 20 minutes career high by a bunch one night to 11 minutes the next night. And this was back to back. It was 3-4. We have spent a ton of time on the pod talking about the challenges of the schedule coming out of COVID. Like, if ever there was an opportunity to inject some fresh legs into the lineup, it seemed like it was Tuesday, even though they had won the night before. They were mathematically eliminated and done. And yet, Jack Rathbone is the only guy to play, where we had talked about maybe they would sit him down in the back-to-back so they could get Ylevi back in for a night. Cole Lind sits for a second straight game. And Jonah Gadjevic, like, you're running out of games here. You send the guy ahead to Winnipeg. Like, that seemed like forethought on the part of the organization to serve his quarantine. He meets up with the team in Winnipeg and then doesn't play either one of those games either. So, I don't know. Like, it's weird because there's such a weird dynamic of the organization would surely love to see some of these young guys, and yet you're asking a coach who may not be a part of the future of the organization. And I don't know. Like, I don't know if there was pushback on Travis's part, if he was just going with the same lineup that had won the night before, as coaches often do, but there was no need to do that. Quite frankly, I was shocked that there wasn't some sort of lineup changes with an eye to some of these young guys for the second game of the back-to-backs against the Jets.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, and this is why, like, even if the Green situation resolves and the Canucks end up doing a deal with him, it's almost worse because they went through the whole season misaligned with their head coach in terms of their long-term interests, right? Like, it's just so nuts, J-Pat, to be totally honest with you. It's just really hard to wrap your head around the degree of, like, you know, I don't want to say negligence, but just like a lack of common sense or care. Like, this entire organization, this entire season, just feels like they've never cared about the season anyway. And, you know, they got what they deserved. And worse, actually, they got worse than they deserved. This was not just like an also-ran season. This was a disaster. But that's, you know, that can happen when you are so inattentive to, you know, almost every aspect of this team, frankly, right? Like, when you don't sufficiently value things like character, when you don't use business principles to construct and manage your team, just insane. But yeah, no, I mean, and we've been talking about this a lot too, right? The young players, the incentives, how it sort of is polluted. All year we've sort of discussed that. I mean, Jonah Gadjevic, I'm surprised he didn't play. I'm not expecting much from him though, J-Pat, right? Like, wasn't expecting a ton from Cole Lind, you know, like there is a qualitative difference between, I mean, how high have I been on Jack Rathbone, for example, multiple times, right? Because when I saw him at lower levels of hockey, it was like, oh God, that guy's awesome. You know what I mean? I've seen Cole Lind play at the AHL level and it's like, you know, if you're looking really hard for positives, you can find them, but it's not like any opposing scout would have watched those games and been like, oh man, Cole Lind, like that's, our guys are in tough, you know? And if you're not that at a lower level, you're not going to be that in the NHL, right? Gadjevic, I don't think the speed's there. Cole Lind, I don't think the first step is there. You know, seeing Rathbone do what he's done over the past four or five games after, you know, fans got so excited about the Olevi stretch passes, right? And it's just like, what a massive difference, right? Between the guy with plus wheels who, you know, could be a really useful offensive driver in the NHL and Olevi, who, like, you really have to be wishing upon a star to see as, like, a future top four guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on. Come on. I feel sometimes like we have to pretend some of these prospects aren't huge hope bets to make any kind of impact at the NHL level. And we do it to be polite and because fans, you know, are interested and wish cast on prospects. But it's like, this club doesn't have a lot coming at this point, other than Pod Colson.
No, but it's a weird dynamic that they're going to end up protecting a guy like Cole Lind or Jonah Gadjevich.
Well, you can't. You have to go get a forward. Like, you have to go get a forward.
I'm with you. Like, we've been abundantly clear. We're aligned on that one. But until I see it happen, it's like weaponizing cap space. Like, we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. Until I see organization actually do something about it, I'm not convinced. And so,
well, but they're aware of it at least. Like, they made that Bowie trade to free up some options for themselves. So, you know, I mean, at least they're aware of it and they're going to try and they're going to kick tires, unlike the weaponizing cap space thing, which was a concept I legit think they just never understood.
So speaking of Bowie, I hope he's on a beach somewhere right now. Like,
I know
he's not going to play. That's another guy. And I don't know if I need to see him play, but like, I remember when they made the trade and we got our first availability with Madison Bowie and he was talking about, you know, how he was ready to, like, this was it. This was the move. This was going to jumpstart his career. He was going to come in and penalty kill and top four. And, like, I don't know. Like, have you even seen him? Has he been on the ice at anything that you have attended for the
Yes, a couple of times, okay. But not of late. Okay. Not of late.
So he exists. But
when, yeah, I mean, they should honestly just get him in, though. Like, why would you not see what you've got there?
Right, and that's why, you know, I'm in sort of this reading into everything I can mode because
the Canucks from the opening drop of the puck yesterday, like, it was clear they had no legs. Like, clearly the team that had COVID falls off more than their opponents in the second leg of back-to-back. So, you know what, I agree with you. They should be making, like, 4 or 5 roster changes for the back-to-backs that remain on their schedule. And that includes guys like Bowie.
Well,
sorry, I just wanted to jump in and say that, because you're right.
Because, look, I'm reading into a ton of stuff right now. And maybe that's because the games don't matter and they don't interest me that much. But, you know, Travis, when he's talked about Rathbone, he's excited too. And he has said, I'm willing to play young guys if I think they can give me a chance to win or give us a chance to win. And so Rathbone keeps playing and, you know, Hoglander had a terrific night on Monday. But then I'm left to sort of infer that Olevi, Lind, and Gadjevich aren't playing because that's what the coach thinks is that those other guys, the Sea of Granlunds, you know, they give his team a better chance to win at the National Hockey League level. And maybe they do. Maybe they do. But again, for a fan base that has watched the Canucks use a high first round pick on Olevi and 2 seconds on Lind and Gadjevich, you'll want to believe that one of those three is going to hit at some point to be able to play at the very least. And so the jury very much out on all three of them. You know, it kind of goes back to earlier in the season when you hoped that one of Gaudette, Virtanen, or McEwen was going to take this big step forward as a mid-20, you know, something lower in the lineup winger that could help the hockey club. And we know how that's played out for really all three of them. Two don't play here. Well, really, two don't. Like, Gaudette certainly doesn't play here anymore. Virtanen likely isn't going to play here anymore. And after this season, I don't know if McEwen is going to get much of an opportunity to be a part of what the Canucks are moving forward.
Yeah. And McEwen, yeah. I mean, McEwen has not played well this season, right? Like, just hasn't. No, I mean, it's just not enough talent on this roster, man. Like, it sucks. Like, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on a bunch of inconsequential players that just aren't that good. You know what I'm saying? But, like, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them in this Canucks lineup.
Right.
Matthew Highmore, top line winger, is, like, not a thing I need in my life. I don't need that.
Thank you.
I don't need that. No one does.
No, you're right. And so you have turned your attention now, even with 5 still on the schedule. You know, you wrote about the to-do list, and it was long. And quite frankly, I mean, you know, it's good reading if people haven't checked it out to do so. It's posted at The Athletic. You know, I thought you made a really salient point at the end, just about the luster around this organization. Like, when we know what the Vancouver Canucks mean to the city of Vancouver and so many people in it, And yes, it's professional sports, and there are way more important things in the world. But for a lot of people, there is an incredible emotional investment in this hockey club. And people are angry, and they have a right to be right now. Like, there is very little to be proud about if you're a fan of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. And you know, I think there's a brand legacy that dates back to sort of the late stages of the Griffiths family ownership and Pat Quinn and Brian Burke's values. And, you know, those have been stewarded through, you know, including by the Gillis regime and company, where the organization behaves in this sort of community-minded way. You've got Canuck Place and, you know, a ton of sort of community events and outreach and a real focus on, you know, positioning the Canucks as part of the fabric of the community in Vancouver and across the province of British Columbia. And, you know, we've now gone through a pandemic where the Canucks have been a bottom 10 spender in the NHL. You know, I think there's been some nice gestures in terms of food banks, but the club's made massive cuts, like massive layoffs have characterized and punctuated this Canucks season. You know, I think we've all been through some tough times. I'm sure we've all, I mean, obviously yourself included, JPAT, you know, but a lot of us have worked for reduced wages or what have you. We've had employers that have stepped up and been transparent about their challenges and, you know, seem to do their best for us. I don't think the Canucks behave that way internally. Do you have a problem with that as a fan, as someone who supported this franchise? Like, personally, just sort of observing it, I don't think it's up to a standard that I associate typically with the Vancouver Canucks. And then you go on and on down the line, you know, the lack of communication with star players, the way that the pandemic sort of, or not the pandemic, but the outbreak played out in terms of the club dealing an index, the index case, in terms of JT Miller feeling like he had to go to the press to blast a dangerous return to play schedule that, you know, the organization had signed off on themselves. You know, it's just ugly, JPAT. Like, it's just ugly. And on some level, you have to think that the standard for leadership from this organization has to be a little bit higher. You know, like, it has to be higher in terms of understanding your role as a civic leader, you know, up and down the line. And that's sort of why when I wrote that column covering the Vertanen allegations, right? You know, I was really keen to separate Vertanen's allegations from the rest of the dysfunction that has characterized this Canucks season. However, for me, the fact that it was Travis Green addressing or doing the no comment thing, addressing the allegations, as opposed to someone higher in the organization, someone who would signal gravity as opposed to it just being something you have to do on a game day anyway. You know, to me, that is part and parcel with the dysfunction that I'm discussing. You know, I think fans should expect more, frankly. I think fans should expect more. Personally, as an observer, I expect more from the Canucks franchise just based on having watched them closely over the past 20 years. This season's been really, really painful because the seams have been visible. I think the lack of care and attention has been obvious. And I think there's been a lot of good people put in really bad spots, whether they still work for the organization or whether or not they were laid off by the organization at some point this year. You know, it leaves a really bad taste in my mouth, having watched and covered it all go down.
I feel like the people of Buffalo could all use a giant bowl of Magic Spoon just to make their world a little bit happier. And I don't want to get too deep into the Sabres, but obviously the Canucks and the Sabres are linked going back to expansion. All of their woes. You were part of that terrific piece midseason about which team has had it worse over a half century. But it does have the feel and makings of another fire sale coming out of Buffalo. And a lot of people are in this, you know, should the Canucks be in on Jack Eichel? Now Sam Reinhart, apparently, you know, he had some sort of comments at the end of his exit meeting that made it sound like, yeah, you know, hey, if they want to move me, sure, I'm open to it, whatever. Reinhart coming off a nice season, 25 goals. Should the Canucks be kicking tires on high-profile players? Whether or not they can make these deals happen, is it not in their best interest to be exploring every option if you're a bottom feeder the way the Canucks are?
Yeah, you have to. And, you know, this team needs another top six forward. Like, they need another top six forward really badly, in my opinion. You know, I like Sam Reinhart. I like him, you know, as a winger anyway, like as a sort of second line sniper. You know, he's going to score a lot. He was top 10 in the NHL in goals, but like, I don't think he's a play driver. He's not like a top line stud play driver, but he's a really good goal scorer. Like, I have time for him as sort of a second line option for the Canucks. But you know, what are you giving up? Like, what are you giving up to get Sam Reinhart? Like, the Canucks aren't the only team that are going to be in on that. He's a top 10 NHL goal scorer this season. Like, there's going to be demand. And I just don't know how the Canucks, like, the Canucks don't have enough to trade. They don't have enough to trade, JPET. There's no good assets here that you can afford to part with. You know, like, you can't part with Jack Rathbone or Quinn Hughes, and you can't part with, you know, Bo Horvat, or, you know, like which sort of goes back to why making deadline deals, like where players like Jordy Benn and Tanner Pearson all of a sudden have value. You know, like, they don't, Tanner Pearson doesn't have trade value now. He might have got you a second or a first round pick 2 months ago, but now there's no value there. That's how life works. That's the NHL, man. So weird, but those expiring deals carry this short window value right at the deadline as teams chase a cup. I just don't see who the Canucks can trade that would have significant value. Honestly, like, maybe we see an H. Schmidt deal. Maybe we see a JT Miller deal. Like, those would sort of be the higher profile guys that I could see move. Yeah, I mean, JT Miller, I think, would have significant value. Nate Schmidt, I'm not sure, after the season he had and with the commitment that he's sort of attached to. Like, I don't think the Canucks are doing much more than recouping their own pick. Or, you know, recouping sort of the type of pick that they got from Vegas. So, yeah, I mean, look, I like the idea. I like the concept, JPAT. I just, like, what am I missing? What does the organization have that they can afford to lose that has value on the trade market?
They don't. Like, because really what you're looking at is Sam Reinhart would be playing the role of Tyler Toffoli, essentially. Like, you would want Brock Besser and Tyler Toffoli, or Brock Besser and Sam Reinhart, but, like, would you trade Brock Besser straight up for Sam Reinhart? Reinhart had a few more goals, but Besser's got time. Like, he could push 25 this year if he has a couple of two-goal games here down the stretch. Besser is younger. He's cost-controlled right now. And
he's a better player.
Right, but so,
like, I don't care about the goal totals. Besser's the smarter, more useful player all around.
Right.
Like, yeah.
But I'm just saying, from the Sabres' perspective, like, what would the Sabres ask be? You know, if it's Brock Besser, like, what are you doing just swapping players at this stage? The Canucks would be getting the older player, and as you said, probably the inferior player. So it wouldn't make sense on that level. But in order to get a player like Reinhart, you got to be looking to move other pieces that the Sabres want. Like, this is what people come up with these trades all the time, but you got to think of it from the other team. Like, the other team's not just giving Sam Reinhart away. Like, it doesn't work that way.
No, they're going to want probably, like, a late first and a player. You know what I mean? Like, that's at least going to be what they look for, is like a first plus, for sure. And the Canucks the Canucks can't give up their first round pick. That's going to be in the draft lottery anyway, right? Like, that pick could end up being Brant Clark or, you know, Beignet or what have you, right? Like, they can't give up that pick. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to be in tough. It's this Canucks team. I don't think they can, like, the Jack Eichel thing too. Like, you can't make, you don't have the depth of assets or talent to make, like, we'll trade two pieces to you for one really good player that's attached to a significant contractual commitment, right? Like, that's not this offseason for the Canucks. They don't have the assets to make those deals anyway, but they also don't have the cap space, right? Like, this Canucks sort of campaign is going to be about allocating money up into, or this Canucks offseason is going to be about allocating money up to Pettersson and Hughes on those second contracts. Those guys become significantly more expensive, as does Demko. That's already done. But you allocate money to some of your top young players. And then once that's done, like, you then have to reconstruct your blue line, probably try and find a top six winger, ideally find a third line center. And you're going to have to do that with, like, you know, somewhere between 8 and 10 million in total cap space. It's like, that's really tough, man. It's really tough. Like, make no mistake, the Canucks are doing an exercise that's going to be similar to what Toronto and Tampa Bay, teams like that, do every single season. It's just that the Canucks are doing it while also having been one of the five worst teams in hockey, right? Like, but that is this offseason for the Canucks. It's going to be on a knife's edge, reallocating cap space, and then doing your best to upgrade, you know, three really high leverage spots in the lineup, top six wing, third line center, D period, like D in general, and doing it on a shoestring because all your money is being proportioned over to Hughes and Pettersson, basically. Yeah, I mean, it's ugly, man. Like, this team still can take advantage of the bright future that that some of their young core represents, but this like, it's going to take years of extraordinary discipline to get this going back in the right direction after what we've seen since the bubble. Like, there's been additional, they were already locked in before the bubble to really scrimping and saving because of some of the inefficient contractual commitments that were left on the books and will be left on the books through next season. But when you sort of throw in all of the lost value from those UFAs departing, when you throw in the fact that the Schmidt thing hasn't really worked out, you know, now it's not just like, oh, they've got cap issues. It's like, they've also got a significant talent issue, right? Like, they're not good enough. They don't have the flexibility to improve. And they're looking at a multiple year project to get this thing even just going in the right direction again. It's going to require a lot of smart bets. It's going to require a lot of sort of finding efficiencies, finding good value from players that, you know, aren't Sam Reinhart, that aren't $4 million contractual commitments, who also are going to have, you know, a third of the league bidding highly for their services, right? Like, that's not the play that the Canucks can make. They need to find the undervalued $1 million guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they need to do. That's what they have space to accommodate. And when you're going bargain shopping, like, yeah, sometimes you get Carter Verhaeghe, but sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get Vinny Hinostroza. Sometimes you get, you know, Matthew Hightower. And yeah, I mean, I think Canucks fans need to prepare themselves for what lies ahead over the next couple months, because that's what this offseason looks like. That's baked in already. And I think it's important that people sort of keep that in mind. Like, this team does not have the flexibility to dreamcast on Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart. That's not where they're at in terms of the stage of their, you know, overall team building cycle.
Right. And I've seen a lot of people say, like, you know, hey, when it gets back to normal and they get back in their division, you know, they're going to beat up on the California teams and they're going to be middle of the pack and they'll be chasing a playoff spot. And then you watch the LA Kings, a team that does have all of those assets, that is
totally
widely regarded as having the best prospect pool, including Tyler Madden, among other players. But, you know,
he didn't have a great season.
I know, but they can probably make a deal that might interest Buffalo, you know, without touching a guy like Quinton Byfield. And then all of a sudden, like, look out, you know, they can reshape their team in a hurry if they do go and pursue a player like Jack Eichel. So
the division will save, like, the Pacific division will save the Canucks. And it's like, do you really expect the border to be open again? Like, do you really think we're trending that quickly toward normal? We're going to have the border open again by mid-October. You think so? You want to bet on that?
I don't know about for, like,
that's the bet you're making, though. If you're like, the Pacific will save us, it's no, like, but okay, like, okay, well, how confident are you that you're not starting this? For, like, how confident are you that we're not doing this all Canadian division again?
Yeah, and like,
I'm not that confident. No, I'm not betting on it.
For civilians, I'm not. I wonder about teams, but then if you're coming into the country and the quarantine,
I mean, because the federal government has been so accommodating to the NHL.
No, you're right. It may be
like, come on.
Another
year. I don't know, man.
Another
year. We might have another year of the Canadian division. But also the logic of the Pacific division will save us requires, like, the Flames not to bounce back, they will. Seattle to not be good, they will be at least good. Like, they won't be great, but they'll at least be a hard out. Based on the way that the expansion draft process works and what's going to be available to them, especially in the flat cap era, right? Like, especially as a clearinghouse and what they're going to be able to accumulate. So Seattle is going to be in the mix. And then, you know, it requires no improvement from LA. LA's LA's going to improve. Like, LA wasn't that bad this year either. They're going to be fine. They're going to be one of those teams that becomes a threat in a hurry. Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking at the Pacific as, like, the Canucks' saving grace. I think, A, I'm not sure it happens, and B, I think people are sleeping on how good Calgary should have been this year, and has been since Daryl Sutter took over. The likelihood that Seattle is, you know, not a traditional expansion team in terms of their quality, but is more imposing than that, and the improvement that I think we can all reasonably expect to come and come in a hurry from the Kings' mix of really talented young players.
Some questions about the other California teams, obviously. Doug Wilson, the GM of the San Jose Sharks, is going to be Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun's guest on the two-man advantage edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. You can check that out at the Athletic app. And we always ask you to leave comments for us at the for every podcast episode we do. We've got a comment section, and I certainly check it out. Love to hear what the VIPs have to say. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And also, if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for $3.99 a month. And now's the time to do it, because now is when it really does start to get interesting. And I know you said, like, you're gearing up. You'd sort of, you know, taken a step back for the last couple of weeks for what's to come, because we're getting to that point in time when the games are done. Like, then the real intrigue begins, and that's where you and Harm will be drilling down on everything that's gone on and needs to go on with this hockey club. So, you know, for many, the offseason now is as exciting and as important as the season itself. And certainly when you
look certainly more exciting than the next five games.
And what, yeah. And who knows what those, like, I really am. I'm really curious to see how they approach them. How do the Flames approach them? Who's in the lineup? And when we talk about some of those young guys like Gadjevich and Lyndon Yolevi, like, how do you, and Travis was asked that too, like, how do you assess these guys, you know, in a situation where these games don't matter and the other team may be dressing a bunch of AHLers as well? Like, it's sort of a weird time to try to be evaluating what you've got at your NHL totally. Level or on the NHL roster. But that's where we are with this. Five games, three of them starting in the noon hour or at 1 o'clock, sunny Saturday afternoon. And again, the league is trying to sweep that thing under the rug. They don't want you, they do not want you to connect the Canucks and the Oilers with the Bruins and the Capitals starting the Stanley Cup playoffs. So, yeah.
How insane is it too that the other teams have to wait?
Yeah.
Like, how does that make any sense at all? Man, it's just ridiculous.
No idea. And I don't get, like, let them play. Like, why? I'm with you. Like,
yeah,
why?
Montreal, Toronto should start on the 16th.
Yeah.
Honestly, it should start on the 15th.
Well, I'd be down for that. And again, just sort of adding to the curiosity of all this, I mean, this is a Canuck-focused podcast. We drill deep on the Canucks, obviously, and we'll continue to do that. But on Friday, when we do this again, we'll have to offer up our playoff predictions, won't we? Like, Canucks season's still going on, but we'll have to sidetrack.
I'm actually really excited. Like, I cannot wait to watch the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, Battle of Alligator Alley, sign me up for that. I've been excited for that for a long, long time.
Don't tip your hand, because we'll go there.
No, I won't. Okay. But I'm also really excited to watch the Maple Leafs sweep the Montreal Canadiens.
I said, don't tip your hand.
I'm just saying, I'm excited for that.
All right. Well, we'll hold you to that. We'll get into some playoff predictions and a little bit of preview and some of the stories that intrigue us, and maybe some of the former Canucks that are actually getting a chance to play in this year's Stanley Cup playoffs. Maybe we'll chart them as well. That's going to do it for this edition of the VanCast. The Canucks move into Calgary, then on to Edmonton, and then three more with Calgary to finish off the season over the next week. For your answer, it's Jay Pat. As always, thanks so much for listening and for your support of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.